KALW.
We start cleaning right following the last float. And then it's our own little parade of cleanup.
Pride March is one of the biggest events in San Francisco. But after all is said and done, who cleans everything up?
It's full board. We're just like cleaning up until 4 a.m. It's just nonstop.
A delicate balancing act of cleaning confetti and glitter. Then what happens when you sing a song with toxic lyrics on repeat for 3 days straight?
You open up the door of your mind and invite this other thing in that then takes over.
And we'll hear a reading from Oakland author Faith Kramer. That's coming up. I'm Hannah Baba, and this is Cross Currents. San Francisco's Pride Parade was in person yesterday for the first time since 2019. And this year, it came just days after the Supreme Court decided to overturn its landmark decision, Roe v. Wade. So the parade event this year got closer to its original roots, with demonstrations taking place at the Embarcadero, the Federal Building, and City Hall. Pride is one of the biggest events in the city. It brings people together to be heard and for just pure celebration. But after all is said and done, who cleans everything up? Priya Mahadevan has that story in this piece from our archives.
If you missed San Francisco's Pride March, let me paint a picture for you. Every year on the last Sunday of June, San Francisco shuts down Market Street for a massive parade of floats that starts at the Embarcadero and ends at the Civic Center. People line the sidewalks holding signs, passing out flyers, wearing feathers and rainbow flair, and throwing glitter in the air. But turns out there are actually two parades.
We start cleaning right following the last float. And then it's our own little parade of cleanup.
This is Peter Lau, Superintendent for Street and Environmental Services for San Francisco's Department of Public Works. I met him in his office 2 weeks before Pride to get a lay of the land. He's in charge of everyday street cleaning for the whole city, but also big events like Pride, Beta Breakers, and the Chinese New Year Parade. Peter works with a crew of almost 100 full-time staff from the Department of Public Works, or DPW. They'll be putting in extra time to work the overnight Pride shift.
It's full board. We're just like cleaning up until 4 a.m. It's just nonstop.
There's a whole complicated choreography of who cleans what when. It's like a dance. First, the corridor ambassadors enter with brooms and leaf blowers. Their job is to move the debris from the sidewalks and edges of the street into the middle of the road. Then you've got the steamers, who do the same thing, but with manual power washers. So now you've got a whole pile of garbage in the center of the street. How does that help? In come the street sweepers. These are the same trucks that you see doing daily street cleaning around the city. They vacuum up that pile of garbage. These trucks can hold between 5 and 10 tons of trash, which may sound like a lot, but throughout the night, they have to keep emptying their load. Finally, there comes the flusher. It's a lot like a street sweeper, but instead of sucking up garbage, it spews out thousands of gallons of water. The idea is to get rid of any remaining icky sticky stuff the sweeper might have missed. But Pride is a little different than most events. Glitter and confetti won't just sit in a pile in the middle of the street for very long, especially if it's windy. So sometimes the flusher will go through first to weigh down all that light fluffy stuff. And then the sweeper will swing by to catch it before it dries up. It's a delicate balancing act. I wanted to see this all for myself and meet the people who work their magic on the margins. So I head to the Embarcadero around noon on Pride Sunday to hang out with DPW late into the night.
Okay, I'm here. The cleanup is getting ready to begin. And I've got coffee. I'm ready to go.
The first person I meet down at Mission and Stewart Street is Kenny Bruce.
Assistant Superintendent for Street Cleaning Citywide Operations. I've been with the department 29 years.
After 29 years, Kenny is calm, confident, and assertive in his role, but also polite with his crew. He's got a goatee and sunglasses on, and he's always scanning the horizon for things that need to get done.
It is just crazy, and that's the way it always is.
Kenny is in charge of making sure everything goes as smoothly and quickly as possible. He introduces me to Guillermo Perez, who's stationed at the tail end of the cleanup procession, making sure nothing's getting left behind. As a native San Franciscan, Guillermo is enthusiastic about this work.
This is my home, so I feel like I'm just contributing back to my neighborhood, towards my city.
And then there's Milton Lau, no relation to Peter Lau. He's a corridor worker. We start talking during a delay in the parade, and while most of the crew waits for further instructions, Milton takes out a metal scraper and squats down to clean gum off the sidewalk.
How long have you been working for the Harvard Public Works?
About a year.
About a year? Nice. How do you like it?
I'm a homeless person, so I'm glad they gave me a job.
Milton's been homeless for more than a decade. He's originally from Hawaii.
The reason why I came to Frisco is because I used to have a bunch of old gay friends, and I was hoping I'd meet up with them. But unfortunately, when I got here, I found out they either passed away or expired or something happened. And they're not here anymore.
Milton's bisexual, but he's not a big fan of Pride. He says he thinks it's just a big party now, and he feels like people today are indifferent to those who had to fight to get their rights. But he likes working for DPW.
For me, it's more like fun than actual work.
I end up having so many conversations with DPW workers like Milton about a whole range of topics, from spirituality to gentrification to acceptance and identity. While most people are here to cheer for all the colorful floats and enthusiastic marchers, it feels like I'm witnessing a slightly different version of the event. It's a lot less glamorous, but still full of pride. Eventually, the parade comes to a close, and that's when the DPW crew really get to work. They're doubling back and forth with street sweepers and flushers to get as much trash as they can off the streets. I'm in Guillermo's truck, and his CB radio is going crazy.
93 DLC. Go ahead, Kenny Bruce.
There's a lot of coordination happening between city departments, like SFPD and MTA, to make sure roads don't open too early and DPW workers are safe.
Do not spray any water up here by all this electrical equipment. They're still breaking down the stage.
10th floor, copy that.
All right, we're removing the barricades at Beale and Market. Sweepers are going to go on to Beale now.
The corridor worker was punched in the face.
But things only get more hectic as the night goes on. As the crew begins to clean around City Hall, I meet up with Peter Lau. The meticulous choreography he told me about in his office looks a lot more chaotic in real life. He says the tight area and tricky streets around Civic Center make it especially challenging.
It's just sort of how the night goes. We kind of just roll with it.
Peter jets from one task to another. He's breaking down barricades that were left up, moving around boxes, making sure the full sweeper trucks are emptied out.
By 4 o'clock, it'll look like we're never here.
That's what I kept hearing from this crew. The goal is to make it look like Pride never happened, that a million people didn't leave behind more than 70,000 pounds of trash. And by Monday morning rush hour, the streets are back to normal, filled with buses and Ubers and pedestrians and your garden variety litter bugs. Soon enough, this street will need another cleaning, and DPW will be back. At City Hall, I'm Priya Mahadevan for Cross Currents.
That story first aired in 2019 and was produced with help from Taylor Caldwell. Audio from San Francisco's abortion rights protest was recorded by incoming Audio Academy fellow Astrid Fidel. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Henhat Baba. Imagine being asked to sing a song with lyrics that disgust you in public. That might be unpleasant enough, but what if you had to perform that song again and again for 3 days? Well, we're about to meet Jules Indelicato, who volunteered to do just that as part of a performance art installation in San Francisco back in 2018. We'll hear why and what it felt like in this award-winning story from our archives.
was a 3-day-long durational performance art piece. It took 30 incredibly talented women and non-binary people. They stationed them with guitars throughout the women's building. And for 8 hours a day, we played songs on repeat that were popular, very well-received songs about love, about loving women, but with incredibly toxic lyrics.
He followed me down the street like I knew he would, because a guy is a guy wherever he may be.
Comes home to you, I'm warning you.
Well, I'd rather see you dead, little girl, than to be with another man.
Don't deny your man's desire. You'd be a fool to stop this time.
Then she'll carelessly cut you and laugh while you're bleeding.
He hit me, and it felt like a kiss.
The point of the piece was, as you would listen to these songs that you grew up with, that you really hold dear to yourself and others, you realize just how deeply the subliminal messages of toxicity and violence are woven into our culture. We were each given songs. The songs were not our choice. I got Under My Thumb by the Rolling Stones.
Under my thumb, the girl who once had me down.
My whole demeanor when performing this song was very full of myself and suave and proud that I had tamed this wild beast. The difference in the clothes she wears, it's down to me. The change has come. She's under my thumb. There I was, the first day. First few repetitions.
Under my thumb.
Oh man, my fingers are gonna get tired. Do I have to pee?
Under
my thumb. A couple
more.
A couple after that.
Under my thumb.
I feel my feet firmly on the floor. A couple more.
Had me down.
I feel my voice getting stronger.
The girl who wants.
A couple more. I'm meditating on one tiny shudder.
Yes, it is.
One small inflection that I make at the end of one verse. A couple more after that, and your mind goes completely blank. Almost like you open up the door of your mind and invite this other thing in that then takes over. And you are the art, and you are this song singing out of your body. And at the end of the song, there's this gigantic release that becomes greater and greater with every repetition. And then a breath, and you start again. You stop seeing it in the in the lens of time, and it becomes more of a sculpture or a painting. In the first minute, people would come in, they'd realize what song I'm singing, and excitement would come over their face, like, oh, honey, she's doing the Rolling Stones. Listen. And by the end of the first chorus, I'd see the smile kind of leave. And I'd see them start to fidget. And I'd see their eyes kind of searching to lock onto mine. By the end of the song, many people would just break down. And then afterwards, I would see these people walk away with almost a look of embarrassment or shame on their faces, just this bashful nod of acknowledgement. There was this one very emotional turn where I had really, really gotten into it and really started to feel like I was that person in the song, that toxic, powerful, snide man with no shame. And I'm singing my heart out, very subdued, but very intense. And I look up, and this woman is crouched in the corner, clutching her heart and clutching her mouth with her other hands and just shaking her head and sobbing. And I look up with a sneer and a smile on my face right as I say, she's under my thumb. And at that moment, my throat caught up in my chest and my eyes started welling up, and I look at her and she looks at me, and I realize that some of this is kind of seeping into my body. Some of this pride in some of this like snarky toxicity. I just felt so gross. And I look at her on the ground and I see how much she's going through. And then I look up and I realize that there's a little girl in the room and she's watching this whole interaction and she's been there for the whole song. And I don't see her parents around anywhere. And then I think about her and I think about all of the songs that she's heard today.
Girl, you'll be your woman.
And how she's growing up being shaped by this same stuff. And it kind of just made me really overwhelmed at how deeply hurt we are by pop culture.
Try to domesticate you, but you're an animal. Baby, it's in your nature.
And the way that they try to define us and shape us.
And that's why I'm gonna take a good girl. I know you want it. I know you want it. I know you want it. Good girl. Can't let it get past me.
And so I wanted to stand up right there and just leave. But I sat back down and I took a breath. And I started the song again and again. And again, the whole while just thinking about how this is necessary, how this magnifying glass that we're casting on pop culture right now is so necessary in these times.
Under my thumb, the girl who once had me down. Under my thumb, the girl who once pushed me around. It's down to me, yes it is. The difference in the clothes she wears down to me. Change has come, she's under my thumb. Ain't it the truth, babe?
That was Jules and Delicato describing their experience as part of the performance art piece Romantic Songs of the Patriarchy. It took place in San Francisco in 2018, produced by Magnolia McKay and sound designer Gabe Graben. They won an award for Best Feature from the Society of Professional Journalists of Northern California and one for Best Use of Sound from the Public Media Journalists Association. This is Cross Currents. I'm Henat Baba. Now we'll gather around the table to learn what's being served on the Jewish Day of Rest. It's another episode from KALW's literary podcast, New Arrivals.
This is New Arrivals, a pocket-sized book tour with Bay Area authors. I'm Lisa Morehouse. Faith Kramer lives in Oakland. Her cookbook, 52 Shabbats, Friday Night Dinners Inspired by a Global Jewish Kitchen, came out in December 2021.
The recipes are the heart of 52 Shabbats and are full of the vibrant tastes I like to serve my family and friends. But the soul of the book is in the stories I tell about the recipes, the ingredients, and the communities that inspire me. Here are a few excerpts from the introduction. Around the world on Friday night, Jews, their families, and their friends come together to celebrate with food, wine, bread, community, and spirit. It's the start of Shabbat, the Jewish Sabbath, the holiday that comes once a week. Shabbat is a space to celebrate, recharge, and share with those you care for. This book shares flavors from around the Jewish world, seasonings from Libya and Ethiopia, sauces from Morocco, Lebanon, and Yemen, and the herbs and spices from the Middle and Near East. Pomegranate molasses brings a sweet tart taste to brisket. Falafel makes a crispy crust for a pizza. Roasted chicken is enhanced by shawarma seasoning. And a spicy beef stew with dried fruit becomes the filling for tamales. From my table to yours, Shabbat Shalom.
That was Faith Kramer reading from 52 Shabbats.
New Arrivals is produced by Lisa Morehouse, and you can hear more authors reading from their new books at kalw.org/newarrivals. And before we leave you, here's some new music from a Bay Area band. Hello, my friend. This is The Umbrellas from San Francisco playing their newly released single, Write It in the Sky. Today's Cross Currents team includes Hanisha Harjani, Sydney Fishman, Lucen Mendel, Aaron Kopp, James Rowlands, Gabe Graben, Victor Tense, Shirin Adil, Shaya Levitt, Sunni Khalid, and Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet as interpreted by Daoud Anthony. For Cross Currents, I'm Henat Baba. Give me a sign.